It's stronger than we thought.
I saw through your eyes.
He will find us, Father. He is coming for us.
I'm waiting.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, and back in the saddle with us this week is Sam Stepanenko.
Hello, hello. Everything's back to normal.
Yay. And Trish Coughlin.
Hey, everybody. Are you sure? Nothing's normal.
Well, normal in the sense that we're back to our normal programming, our regular scheduled programming, rather than special episodes and all that fun stuff.
Yes. Yes. I did make a promise that we'd get back to normal this week, and now we're back to normal. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
As normal as we get.
And this movie, I mean, this is actually surprisingly normal for us, actually.
It is, and that scares me so much. Yes.
The stuff we put ourselves through.
Yes, this is one of those, oh, man. We got some work to do. We are talking Metal Storm, The Destruction of Jared Sin from 1983, directed by Charles Band and written by Alan J. Adler. Charles Band, most famous for like creating the Puppet Master franchise. He wrote the first one, Trancers, and probably up until Marvel made a Doctor Strange movie, my favorite Doctor Strange movie that wasn't a Doctor Strange movie called Dr. Mordred. It was intended to be a Doctor Strange movie, and the license was too expensive because, let's face it, it's Charles Band, and he likes to make everything on dirt cheap budgets.
And you can tell with this one.
Oh, man.
This one, he actually took this movie to Cannes with like nothing but a poster that said begin shooting, you know, a few months from now, just to get the funding and sell the movie. And then he had to go back to Cannes, I think the year later, because they were running out of money on the shoot to get the rest of the money, money to finish it. And of course, he asked for more. He got way more than the movie cost to make. So he'd already, even out of the gate,
he made money.
He did probably doubled his money. I couldn't find an actual budget for this, but based on the special features I saw, I'm guessing around $2.5 million. And it did get a pretty wide release in the U.S. because they were trying to revive the 3D trend in 1983.
Yes.
And this is one of the ones leading the way, and a lot of theaters were pairing it up with Jaws 3D.
Oh, no.
Well, I know. Well, imagine how disappointed that double feature was.
Oh, so sad.
And it's funny because I remember the TV ads for this.
Yeah, me too.
Right? So it got some good exposure in the 80s because this was a big thing in the
early 80s. Oh, it opened in over 5,000 theaters. Yeah. I mean, it only made $5.3 million in the U.S. I don't know how that would be worldwide, but like that's not bad. I mean, that probably doubled its actual budget, and that's not including all the stuff he'd saved in the coffers beforehand.
Exactly. Yeah. So he did some of the original crowdfunding then.
Yeah.
Well, he did.
That's how you did it back then.
Well, he did basically. He took a page out of the book from the Canon Film guys, or no, Golan Globus, because they did that same thing where they just came with a poster and said, "This is the movie we're making," and got the funding before, and then just sold it on that. Like they kind of pre-sold before it got made.
Yeah, do you guys remember the poster? Have you seen the poster? Can we start there? with the catchphrase, "High noon at the end of the universe." Oh, is that where we were?
I have no idea.
I don't know where the fuck we were.
I don't know where the fuck we were either, because that was not established except on the poster. In the poster, it's got spaceships and planets, and none of that's in the fucking movie.
Nope.
None of that's in the fucking movie.
You know what this movie is? Is a lot of fucking driving.
Oh, yes.
A lot of driving.
I got a lot of slow fucking drives.
Yes.
These are the slowest car chases I've ever seen. I'm pretty sure they were meant to be sped up, but because of the short runtime of the film,
oh, yeah, for sure.
They
oh, yeah.
just left them as is to fill it up. And oh. it's like, it yeah. doesn't look exciting at all. It looks like they're no. being very careful in a quarry.
Yes.
Yes.
It is so tedious. Like the first 10 minutes, like, I'm, oh, fuck, this is going to be a long movie. I know it's only an hour and 24 minutes.
It is,
but,
yeah, it is 84 minutes. I think the end credits are about 10.
Well, yeah, that's 10 minutes of it.
Because they were really trying to pad the fuck out of this movie.
Yes.
And there's just, like, there's lots of stuff in here where they could have expanded on the characters and just the world and try to make more sense of it. Because a lot of it just seems to be thrown in there and you'll be fine. Yeah. No, I don't know what any of this fucking means. And I seem to remember liking this as a kid. But
don't know
now
why.
That I think about it, I think I only watched it a couple of times. So in my mind, I had better memories of it because I didn't repeat watch it. That kind of tells me I probably didn't.
Well, yeah, there's only one genuinely interesting character in there. And they don't use that character enough. And that's Baal.
Yeah,
in my mind, I remember him being in the movie more. But maybe I just focused on that as a child.
Because he's so heavily in the trailer, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and he's the most interesting-looking character.
I think that's all his scenes in the trailer.
He was a stuntman, an amputee stuntman. So he had this metal arm in the movie that was sometimes like half a metal arm, and then it would telescope.
Yeah, it was
something
freaking
bigger.
Cool.
It was really cool. And I should mention, like, this is 3D, and so a lot of things were just jutting into the camera at any
given
time.
I was actually really impressed at how much restraint they showed doing that, using that, because I was expecting a lot more of that sort of stuff coming out of the screen at you.
There was one point, like, the vehicles were driving away and they just push in on this plant because it's gonna stick out in 3D.
And
they hold on that for a long time. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? You should have led with that and then pulled out into the scene rather than the other way around. I don't know what the fuck they were thinking.
I tell you, what's real fun is to watch this movie, see that moment, and only read about the 3D after.
See, actually, I didn't feel like going to find my glasses, but I have the Scream Factory release, and it actually has both versions on it.
Okay. So,
but they didn't pack it in with glasses because they're cheap motherfuckers. And I have some kicking around. I just didn't feel like doing that.
why waste any more time on this movie than you had to?
I thought about watching it again, and after I watched it, I'm like, fuck no.
No.
I gotta let this settle for a little bit, my anger. And let's start with the anger of the title.
Okay,
that's a complete lie.
It is a complete lie. Metal Storm, the destruction of Jared Sin.
It's not even the defeat of Jared Sin.
Somebody, I think it was like one of the second unit directors, had said, we should name this the disappearance of Jared Sin.
Yeah.
He's like, no, the destruction sounds better. Because he gets away.
Yes.
Yeah.
He gets away.
To where, we don't know. It just...
So, you know, having been told that this is the destruction of Jared Sin, and he escapes, and then the credits roll, I'm like, fuck you hard.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. I was expecting, like another 20 minutes worth of movie where he actually goes in and finally gets him and destroys him.
Yes. You're so right. And they had it. They were almost there. And then...
They could have done that instead of padding it out with the fucking driving.
Yes.
Oh, these
sky sleds in this Road Warrior-esque universe made no sense at all.
Well, when did those come up? And then, like, why?
They were the very first scene.
They were in the very first scene.
I expected 3D to be just a big middle finger just jutting out the screen at me at the end of the goddamn movie. Just a big finger.
I can't believe you. Here's an hour and 24 minutes. You're never getting back.
I can't believe Universal bought this piece of crap.
This was right after the whole Road Warrior phase started. So they're trying to tap into that and the fantasy stuff that was also very popular at the time.
Yeah.
And they just mashed it all together into one ugly mess.
Yeah, and this just happened to be at a time where a lot of big franchises were hitting their threes and doing a 3D gimmick. Yeah. Friday 13th was doing it, and Jaws was doing it, and this movie was kind of almost leading the pack, actually. They were there weren't a lot of preceding it, and they were trying to revive the 3D gimmick from the 50s.
Yeah, and
it keeps
this
coming.
Not the one to tie your card to, for sure.
No, and this was definitely trying to capitalize on the success of Road Warrior.
Yeah, for sure.
And even the Jared Sin was in Road Warrior. The character played by Michael Preston was in Road Warrior.
Yes, yeah.
And the lead character is dressed like Mad Max.
Yes, he is.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about Dogen. He's the worst fucking hero ever.
Yes, Dogen? You are right.
He is the worst. Okay, first, he gets rescued by the girl. Then he gets rescued by his friend.
Yeah.
The only time that he actually does something remotely heroic, not even at the end, because Jared Sin gets away, is when he fights Richard Mull's character.
Yeah.
And even then, he cheats.
He does.
He is a shitty fucking hero.
You watch it. It was just kind of this lucky move. He was going to kind of fall, and then he kind of springs back forward, and it catches him off guard.
Yeah.
And then
cuts the rope.
Cuts the rope and gets him,
This reminds me of Yor, because Yor is also a terrible hero.
But he's still a better hero than Dogen.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
This also kind of reminds me of Krull, where there's this lots of mixing of genres into the point where it's
but not
just,
as well.
Nothing meshes very well. Yeah. There's laser guns and sorcery and the
knife fights
and knife fights.
Yeah.
Like, what a mess this thing is.
Oh my god, yes.
Yeah, and then you have the heroine, whatever you want to call her, Kelly Preston, who actually was surprisingly good in this movie.
Also, the only one to really get a huge career, you know, after this movie. You know, she went on to things like Jerry Maguire and some not so good things like Battlefield Earth.
Yes, yeah.
But to be honest, that one was really not quite her fault. Like, it's one of those ones.
It was a big movie that she probably took it because it was
it's
a
like
big,
if you're a nun in the Catholic
movie.
Church,
it's because
like, let's
her
make
husband
a movie.
Made it.
That's true.
Yeah. And it's also her religion. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so
that's a rule.
Ultimately, I think she had no choice.
The fact that they made a science fiction film should have been their first clue.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, she was her performance was probably one of the better performances in the movie.
Yeah. She's just has that natural charisma and talent.
But she was hardly in it.
Yeah. Oh, she disappears for most. I was like, did she just have scheduling problems because she doesn't show up much?
No, it was just shitty writing. Let's face it, this whole movie is just shitty writing.
I know, but I need to believe in something.
Even our bad guy is hardly in the movie.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
I swear, almost, except for your lead, I think everybody else was only available for a day or something. Yeah. They shot this movie in 6 weeks.
Yeah, well, his best friend disappears after a certain point.
Yeah, it's Tim Thomerson's kind of in the middle and then goes away. And then shows up at the end with to pick everybody up after the weird space.
After getting shot in the head.
Getting shot in the head, yeah.
Well, he was punched in the head with a spiky thing.
Yes, sorry.
Yeah.
Yes.
So he can still survive, but
He was winged.
Yeah, it's just
to be fair, that's one of the best line deliveries of the movies. Like, I get in, princess, then let's go. Because to me, it seemed unclear who he was referring to.
Yes. Such a Han Solo-esque line, by the way.
Yeah.
And that character was actually kind of clearly inspired by Han Solo. That's kind of roguish.
I think he even had a vest. Trades.
Know what? Get rid of Dogen. I want to watch this guy.
You know what? The one thing, I'm a big fan of Tim Thomerson. I think that he's way underrated as an actor, and he's done some great stuff, and he really should have been the lead in this.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this actually was his first time working with Charles Band, and it led to a very long partnership.
Very
which
long.
Probably wasn't the best for his career, but, you know, he had 5 Transfer movies out of that, and the Doll Man franchise, so he was kind of the face of Full Moon for a while, before Full Moon even existed. A cult classic of Sam and I's that we really love, he was in Near Dark. So.
Yes, he was.
Yes.
Yeah. He was also in Hunt for Red October.
That's right, he was.
Yeah. Yeah, so his career was a mix of highs and lows, like most careers, right? Especially for these middle actors, these sort of mid-range actors, right?
Mm. Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, he's working a lot, and he should be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's still working, apparently.
Well, before we started, the movie I must see is Bring Me the Head of Legend.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of these guys were in this movie are still very active in TV, and that's where they kind of came and stayed in a lot of cases. But some had much bigger careers as well.
Well, like the lead in this was in an old Twilight Zone episode called The Bewitching Pool as a child.
Yep. Yes. Yep. Yep. And his acting never did get any better.
No.
I mean, for your lead to bring in your absolutely the weakest actor in the whole film as your lead is not a good sign to start with.
No.
Yeah. Well, and he's sweaty all the time. And
well,
he's
a
little
desert,
pretty.
So I kind of get that.
I get that. But I was like, it seemed like I For sure, they're just adding baby oil to him all the time.
He's dressed in a plastic suit.
Yeah,
he's
in the desert.
He's got this thick leather.
No, plastic. It was plastic. Yeah.
But after a while,
this plastic
I'm like,
version of a road warrior thing they probably picked up at Halloween pop up store.
I just after a while, I get distracted. I'm like, I just want to wipe his face. I just want to.
Yeah, because when Tim Thomerson's character shows up, he's also very sweaty because it's hot. You can tell
that
was
pulls it off.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, it looks a little more natural on him for some. Well, you're right. He's actually sweating, but maybe. The actor who plays Stojan is just a greasy fucker.
Oh, my.
Oh, I'm totally a sweary fairy today. That's okay.
That's okay.
Sweary fairy.
The fact that you said that really just takes a lot of the mustard off any of it.
Yeah,
it
really does.
I don't know where I got that from, but I like the rhyming of it, so I'm going with it.
It is fun. I'm going to borrow that. Thank you.
Yeah, it just sounds anything offensive. It's just the shine has been taken off of it.
Yes.
And it worked, okay?
Yay!
Distraction successful.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, you guys ready for a trailer for this thing? I do like the trailer, by the way. It oversells.
The good part of the movie, right?
Yeah.
Just watch the trailer. That's all I recommend to anybody.
I did find somebody who kind of pieced these clips together and manages to make a somewhat cohesive story of the movie in about 10 minutes on YouTube.
Ooh.
And it's actually called The Disappearance of Jared Sand.
Nice.
So thank you for accuracy.
Yes.
All right,
we can start fixing this mess.
That's right. Yeah. All right, here's a trailer for Metal Storm, The Destruction of Jared Sin.
In a future that grows ever closer, the fate of our Earth will lie in the hands of one man, a solitary warrior of great courage. His name is Dojin, and he is called The Finder. His enemies will emerge from the underworld to test his strength. Yurok, the Cyclopean Warlord of the One-Eyes. The Assassin Baal. Half-man, half-machine. And Jared Sin, leader and mastermind of the Sinister Renegades. They will utilize their cruelest weapons. They will exploit their most mysterious powers as they create an epic non-stop action-adventure movie that will challenge your senses. And they will do all this for you in 3D this summer. Metal Storm, The Destruction of Jared Sin in 3D.
At least they picked a good voiceover guy.
Yes, yeah, so they did one thing right. And that was probably the studio, not Charles Band.
Yeah.
Yeah. The studio's like, we gotta sell this.
Yes.
Let's do this.
Exactly. It's like, we'll get the best trailer guy we can, and we're gonna get the best voice we can, and we're gonna make this look fucking amazing.
We'll get about this trailer editor that we can.
And it did. I mean, when I saw that trailer as a kid, I'm like, I wanted to see that movie.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. We didn't get that movie, though.
No. No. I'm glad I didn't go to the theater to see that movie.
Oh, I would have been mad. So mad. I mean, I was mad just rewatching it.
It was a tough watch, and I remember when the credits roll, I'm like, oh, fuck you hard.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mine was not quite that bad, but it was like, what the fuck? Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they were trying to set up for a sequel then. Never actually happened.
Yeah. Which is actually kind of surprising because it did do reasonably well given the production.
Yeah, from what I could tell in the special features, the sequel was going to have like giant robots and stuff, and I think that just wound up becoming Robot Jocks.
Ah.
Yeah. But I mean, if you're trapping Jared Sin in another world of reality, you can just start from scratch, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
you can do the mess they did with He-Man, where he just comes to modern day world.
Yeah, but they never did follow through, and that was the thing is they set it up as a series and failed miserably in the initial release, and now we know we never get that closure, and that's a tough thing. So when we remake it, there will be closure, there will be destruction. Oh, yeah.
For sure, yeah. Like Jesus Christ, yeah, we gotta have destruction and truth in advertising at least.
Well, exactly.
I want a climax to this movie. I want
a coherent story.
Yes. Well, that's also good. You know what? I just want a movie.
Yeah. We kind of recapped this in the first 15 minutes, really.
Yeah, there's not much to this story.
No, you got a minor daughter who survives an attack by the Nomads and Jared Sid's men, which right away I was like, okay, they discover this crystal, this whole economy of theirs is surrounded by valuable crystals of some sort. And okay, sometimes
and I know what you're going to complain about here.
And they have power. And she finds this really honking big one fairly easily in a mine that was clearly a mine. And nobody saw it. So they come out with this huge crystal, and the Nomads come out, and here's Baal, picks it up and smashes the fucking thing. Wait a minute. They just said they were going to be able to live comfortably for the rest of their lives on this one crystal. Why would you do that? Why wouldn't you take the crystal?
Yeah, I didn't understand that. They explained the mine actually very well.
Yeah.
It's like they explained that it had been played out, or had been abandoned because it had been played out.
Yeah.
But her father had a feeling that there was more to be had there, and then she comes across this giant.
It didn't make sense for where they found it, because they were clearly right near the entrance.
Yeah, they were kind of like in the middle to the end to the entrance. Yeah, it was not well placed, the story.
It was production problem.
But the story was that was probably the best writing in there. They explained that. They actually explained one thing.
But and then the Nomads come along who probably could use the cash and smash the fucking thing.
I don't get
that. It makes no sense. So that's a fix thing there.
Yeah,
there's so much to fix in this. We should probably just start at the very beginning and fix it from start to finish.
Well, let's go through the casting.
Yeah.
Go through the cast really quickly. I mean, I think we've mentioned almost everybody, but Jeffrey Byron was Dojin. Michael Preston from Road Warrior was Jared Sin. Tim Thomerson was Rhodes. Kelly Preston was Diana. And of course, they have to spell everybody's name really fucking weird.
Yep.
Just to be, weird. Richard Mull, who we've talked about a couple of times, Sword and the Sorcerer, and which episode I'm not sure, and one of the early ones, and episode 65, House.
Yes.
Yep.
He was also in that. R. David Smith was Baal, and Larry Pennell was Axe. He was in Bubba Hotep. And Marty Zagon was Zax.
Yeah, it's a relatively small cast. Lots of extras, but as far as the actual performance, loosely using the term performances, but was a fairly small cast, six to eight people there. Sorry, and Annie was actually Annie, the bartender, was one of my favorite characters. I don't think she was in the casting.
Mickey Fox,
yes. I liked her. I thought she was actually a lot of fun to watch. That bar scene actually was one of the better scenes in the movie.
Yes.
Right. I mean, it was very contrived and
very cantina.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. A very, very Star Wars. There's a lot of ripped off from Star Wars here.
I mean, one of the people describes this as Road Warrior meets Star Wars.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it meets Star Wars. I think it stole a lot from Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I can see where you can have that kind of saga in a way and meshing that kind of feel to Road Warrior.
Yes.
And I could see that working. It didn't here,
no.
But I could see what they were trying to do.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I think that, I mean, this was Charles Band, only his third film, I think.
Yeah.
Right, so it was fairly early in his career as well. So he hadn't found his stride yet, because, I mean, he did get better at crafting a complete story.
Oh, yeah. You watch some of those later full moons, and sometimes they're packed to the brim with story.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
And maybe this was a learning experience for him in that sense. It's like, well, I can't go to film if I don't have a good script, right? Or at least a working script, because he didn't. He clearly didn't.
No, I mean, this was clearly, he sold this on a cool poster and an idea.
Yeah.
And
a treatment.
Well, yeah.
They got one of the best poster artists in Hollywood to do up the poster.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like he sort of had all these ideas, but he's like, oh, I just have to make sure I get them all in. I'm not going to flesh them out or do anything with them. I'm just going to make sure they're all in here.
And the one thing they also did really well is they got a lot of young and hungry special effects guys for this movie, and they are still in the business today. For considering the really low budget on this movie, they made some pretty decent things. I mean, there's stuff that doesn't make any sense. The little sandworms that attacked them made no sense, but the puppets looked okay. Yeah. The vehicles looked okay, but sometimes rattled a little too much where you were afraid they were going to fall apart.
Oh, sorry. That was the very first thing I wanted to mention, and you just reminded me. The very first time you see that car, it jumps over that dune,
and
pieces fall off the car.
I saw some shift, but I didn't.
Yeah, there was there was like a big piece that fell off that went flying off the vehicle.
I missed it.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm in for a treat, aren't I? I just knew right then and there. I'm like, this is a disaster.
I wish the movie looked as good as their designs and storyboards. Those looked like amazing looking film. What the fuck is this?
Yes.
Oh, there's several scenes where you're watching all these vehicles go by, because again, lots of driving, and the camera is like shaking. You can see the rattling because you can't keep it still.
Yeah. There was...
That's so bad.
Second unit director had to... Because Charles Band at times would just change his mind on the set and go against what's in the script. And was like, hey, we need to blow this vehicle up. And their AD would come up like, we can't do that, Charles. We need it for a different scene that actually takes place earlier in the movie. Because, you know, you're shooting out a sequence, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good thing. He had some people on the set who could say, hey, no, not a good idea yet.
Yeah. When one of your principal things is going to get blown up and you're working on a small budget. Yeah. And sometimes people are crafting things in the 11th hour.
There were a lot of explosions and a lot. The only thing Dojin apparently was good at was driving.
And those explosions would have looked a whole lot better if those scenes had been sped up. Because, Jesus, watching these long, boring chase scenes that looked like they were going at about 20 miles an hour.
Yeah, they were in a playground zone.
Well, yeah, right? You can some of the stuff, like you can tell, A, they probably didn't want the vehicles to fall apart, and B, they didn't want them to tip or anything weird to happen because obviously they weren't constructed properly.
Well, no, I mean, back then it would have been standard procedure just to speed up the film so you can shoot it safely and it'll look a lot more exciting.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But that's why you have to drive slow and then speed it up.
Yeah, and I'm sure they left it slow because they needed to pad the film.
I mean, you can tell that's what they were doing. Like that first opening scene where it was almost 10 minutes driving.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, they're padding this. They're padding this so bad. Mm-hmm. You could tell right at the beginning.
Yeah.
That they didn't have much to work with.
Yeah. It probably took them 10 minutes to actually get in that fucking vehicle. Like, how the fuck did you get that sliding door? And it was... Just the base of that door was well above your waist. Well,
and how
so
many
he
times
probably needed a ladder to get into that fucking vehicle.
Yeah, well, and how many times did they show him stop, get out of the vehicle, and then grab that gun out of the thing? I think about five times they showed that exact shot. Mm-hmm. I mean, it may have been different shots, but it was exactly the same thing every single time.
Yep.
Yeah, let's do another shot of him getting out of the car. Oh, another shot of him getting out of the car. Oh, well, another shot of him getting out of the car.
Well, that's why when you see it, though, he's actually not climbing out of the car. He's just gotten out of the car.
Yeah.
Because it took him forever to get in and out of the actual vehicle.
They did that. Yeah, they shot those scenes, just spent a day doing in and out of the, car and just put those in when they needed them.
Yeah. You know, Ed, there's almost no words for how bad this movie actually is.
Yeah. Dojin was a marshal, a seeker, and he was after Jared Sin for something.
Yeah, I guess explain that.
It was essentially Jared was trying to start a holy war.
Yeah, because there was a treaty between the nomads and whatever.
The Cyclopians?
Yeah.
Well, it was also part of it.
Yeah, we're part of that nomad tribe. Mm-hmm. They're in the nomad territories, right?
Yeah.
But they don't explain. And this is where the first thing I'd fix is I'd do a setup scene where they're giving him his task, his mission. Mm-hmm. In their own territory, so you understand what's going on.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Because he just starts with him driving. There's no explanation as to where he's from.
Oh, yeah.
What the treaty is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you need to set up, like, the political structure of your world. Let's just set up the world. Like, the Cyclopians, in the special features, they say it was a radiation that affected their genetics so that one eye would... But it just looked like their face was melted. Now, for me, I'm like, well, what if the Cyclopians are actually a cult, and this is part of their ritual. So
that's what I thought.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, and if they have this melted look on the side of their face, it's because it was actually done. It's part of your achieving adulthood.
That would explain the scene with that freaking crystal mask a lot better too.
Oh yeah, what the fuck was the mask about?
I didn't get anything from that. What is that? Like, I thought it was to take you into the crystal or out of the crystal. Well, I don't know what it was for.
It connected him to the crystal. Yeah, that's what happened. It connected him to the crystal that Jared Sin
was
using.
It was another a mystical thing where Jared Sin had learned to tap into this crystal with these smaller crystals that stole the life force of these victims who ball had set up with this green goo. But that's what the green goo is, was it kind of drugged them and made them susceptible so Jared could just walk up and go zap.
Yeah. And take
that, yeah. Okay, but that cleared that. Up something for me. I couldn't fucking figure any of that out.
I needed the special features to tell me that.
Yes.
Yeah,
so,
oh,
I mean,
you.
I kind of figured it out during the film.
Could have been in the movie.
I'm like, okay, he's drugging them somehow, I think. And what? You get this weird
misty.
We could
tell misty, it was acid or whatever.
Well, yeah. Why are they padding so much when there's stuff that could have been answered?
I'm like, why aren't you just killing them and then... like, I don't know. I guess you have to touch them with that crystal. And if you're touching people with the crystal to steal their souls, do you have to prep them first like they did? Or because if you're just holding the thing, shouldn't you just go, oh, shit, and pass out?
See, what I think it should have been is like, yeah, no, you have to handle it with something, but you can still take people out. Like, I'd give it a handle, like some sort of sacred handle or something. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, make it look more like a...
Because Dojin had one of these crystals, and he was handling it with his bare hand.
Yeah. Yes.
And going, what is this? What is this?
And he never uses the thing.
No, again, something that, that went nowhere.
Yeah, when you see the bad guy's got one, and he's got one, and yeah, he uses this with other people to find out what it actually is and does. But you would think that would come into play in the final combat of some sort.
Yeah, right? It would be part of the climax. And I have all kinds of ideas about how to fix that end bit.
And if all of these souls and mental energies are in this giant crystal, like at one point Diana is touching that crystal, can hear her father in there. When Dojin shoots the fucking thing, shouldn't the souls fly out like it's like Raiders of the Lost Ark?
I was expecting something like that, but again, budget, obviously, right?
I mean, this movie probably would have looked really great at about $13 million. When you think about other movies around this time that were made, like, I don't know, Space Raiders or something like that, that had that kind of budget, that were kind of a similar
Even pumping
ilk.
It up to 8 would have done magic.
Yeah.
There's potential in this movie, and this is what we do, right? Yeah. Is we find these movies that had potential and fix it. There's a lot of fixing, though.
Oh, boy.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, we've already just talked about setting up the world and
okay, well, I think I've solved and made the Cyclopeans kind of cool. And
and that's kind of, I think, what we were all thinking anyhow. Thing. Yeah,
yeah, and then you kind of, it almost happens organically just watching the movie, and then the special features tell you opposite of that.
Yes. So
let's just lean into what you're already thinking.
Yes, exactly. And that's... Actually, I'll go there right now.
And we shouldn't be sitting on Dojin's shoulders. We should be bouncing back and forth between your four main characters and what they're doing in this world before they all come together.
Yes.
Because I have no idea what Jared Sin is doing for like a large portion of this movie. And then you all of a sudden kind of come to him and he's in a cave? What?
Yeah. And the thing is every time that Jared Sin is on is on screen, he basically says the same thing. I'm going to use these souls to take over the world. Mm-hmm. Right? But it's the same thing over and over and over again, right? And then he's ordering his son to do something, right? Something bad. So you don't really get a sense of who Jared Sin is. Mm-hmm. He's just this despotic warlord.
Well, I think, like, you've got your road warrior, you got your fantasy, you've got your sci-fi aspects. I think at least one of those needs to go.
I would get probably rid of the... No, you know what? I would get rid of... You know, that's tough because the Lost Souls, I think, it could work really well.
I like the idea that the crystal... Like, certain crystals in this world contain certain abilities. Like, we already know it's commerce. Mm-hmm. There's a crystal actually on Dojin's glove, and that actually powers the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So when he's touching, I had needed the special features for that.
Yeah, because I wondered about that too. I'm like, why is that there? I didn't get anything.
Yeah, and it was when he's touching his gear shift or whatever, his steering wheel. This is powering up the vehicle. Literally, this is what's letting him control the vehicle.
You know, then that actually would be really cool because that could power his gun as well, right? And I don't mind the mix of science fiction and fantasy as long as it works.
Yeah,
I don't know if we need to get rid of it, but we definitely need to make it work better.
No, but yeah, there's just certain things you kind of got to lead into and explain, and maybe you need a scene where somebody's explaining it to their young son or what these crystals are meant for. Or maybe an opening narrative bit.
I have a thought. Maybe that could be part of the whole strife between the two factions, is that the Cyclopians consider them sacred objects and everybody else is using them as commerce and using them for other things.
We know the mine that the Diana and her father were mining from was Nomad territory
and deep in it.
And then the Lost Temple that that Tim Thomerson's Rhodes takes Jojen to. I'm not even sure why they were going there. I guess that was where the mask was. Yeah, that was
that's where the mask was.
That's where the mask was, and this was a way to kind of defeat Jared Sand.
Yeah, well, yeah, because they were supposed to, for some reason, they were supposed to find the lost city of Set, and they left you with the impression that that's where they expected to find Jared Sin.
Yes.
Right? And ultimately, it's not where they find him, but they find this mask that connects Dojin to the crystal that Jared has been filling, has been charging with souls. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an interesting concept. I just don't think that it was handled very well.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, I think there's an almost entire scene where Jared Sin should find this crystal and he can hear the souls within it and learning what it can do and this control it can have. You kind of need a scene to set that up, but he actually doesn't have the full control device. He doesn't find that mask, mm-hmm. which is what he needs to kind of peer into this crystal scape.
Yeah.
Ooh, crystal scape.
Yeah. Like I think there should have been part of the climax should have been inside there.
Yeah. The prism verse.
Yeah, I agree. I was thinking the same thing. Is we have this device that will take the soul and transfer it to the crystal that we know Dojin has mm-hmm. that was never used. And that's what I was expecting to happen was Dojin to get Jared Sin with it and have him go to the crystal and have all these souls that he has taken get their revenge on him.
Yeah, it'd be an interesting to see this kind of crystalline world. You think like the Doctor Strange movie where they have that. Whatever they called it, universe, that mirror thing.
Multiverse.
Where it's flipping around and all this stuff. You can have like this really interesting visual crystal universe in there. And part of what Dojin has to do is rescue the souls out of there. I mean, he's not bringing them back to life so much as
freeing them from their entrapment.
And I think that would be a good climax where there's an actual fight. None of this, we'll just get rid of the sky sleds entirely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And Dojin can make a last ditch out. Doesn't actually win, just enough to manage enough time to leave Jared behind and then blows the fucker up.
Yes.
With the crystal. So you can actually still have that ending mean something.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. And you certainly, I mean, like I said, I like the idea of these souls, that the look of panic on Jared Sin's face when he realizes that he's in this world with all these souls that he's trapped.
Yeah. Because I think destroying the crystal would have just left people trapped in the shards of this crystal.
That's
like, it didn't make a lot of sense why he destroyed it. I'm like, if you don't understand it, maybe you should leave it the fuck alone.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Right?
But I think the mask gives him that understanding and he understands how to release the souls.
Yeah, rather than
uses the mask to do it.
Yeah, because they make it sound like this is going to be energy to open a portal into other worlds you can defeat. I'm like, you could barely defeat the desert part of this world. So yeah. You got a lot of work to do before you should be branching out into world-conquering mustache-twirling villain.
Yes. Right?
Especially with those big lips of yours. Your mustache is going to look really funny.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I think the idea of him just wanting to expand the Nomad Lands into like take control of the Nomad Lands and grow it beyond into the civilized lands, for lack of a better way of putting it, right, is probably a good enough motivation. We don't need other universes and
stuff like think we also need to see where Dojin is coming from. He's obviously been put on this mission. Is he coming from a bigger city state that is less inclined to be worried about this guy, or why are they suddenly finding this guy a threat now that, and that's probably because he's uniting forces within these Badlands.
They explain that halfway through the movie.
Yeah.
That Dojin has broken the treaty.
But we need
Jared has broken.
Yeah, I think we need to see Dojin deployed from this bigger city state.
Yes, and we need to see more about how these crystals are used, like you were saying, is give them a purpose. They're not just a source of wealth. They have a purpose.
Yeah, right? Yeah, even on Krypton, those crystals meant something.
Yes. That big crystal, like that little crystal in his palm, when you see that, it makes that big crystal make sense as to how wealthy it could make
someone. Yeah, and you've got, and why were those little ones that stole the souls red, but the big one was white, like the one they found?
Yeah.
Like, I think there should be colorful differences and maybe shine. Beside the lake.
Yes. And we didn't do anything with those.
No.
Yeah, so I think there needs to be some sort of explanation as to what these crystals mean and what what their purposes are. If some are meant for fuel, others are meant for commerce.
Well, and that's a beautiful setup scene.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful setup scene because you can have a senior officer explaining to Dojin.
They're powering weapons.
Yeah, that Jensen has cut off the supply of crystals. So they're not getting the white crystals and the white crystals that only come from the Nomad Range. Right? Maybe they have like the green and the blue, which are which have purpose, but they can get those.
Yeah,
right?
And maybe another big supply was by the Cyclopians, who've now allied themselves with Jared Sid.
Yeah, and I would like to we'll go back to the Cyclopians because I have some thoughts on how we could make that work better for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, their chieftain was Richard Mole, and when Dojin meets him and they've gotten the mask, did you get that? And Tim Thomas says, no, he took it.
Yes.
Then he can live. And then right away he says, well, you're on our territory. That's an automatic death sentence.
Yeah.
But you just said he can live. Yeah. So which is it?
I know. There's inconsistency.
Yeah. So you could fix that. You could say, well, now that you've taken the mask that nobody else has been able to task, you have to complete the rite of passage.
Yeah. They could just woven that better instead of, I mean, obviously they were giving that to this panicked version of Rhodes, but it didn't make a lot of sense. That whole scene didn't make any sense at all.
No, it didn't. But it could make sense quite easily, right? Right, because it starts off with a bit of a reference.
If you want to keep it, you're gonna have to pass through me.
Yeah, because you make it set it up so like you add a little bit of that mystical in there. It's like nobody else has been able to touch the mask, kind of thing.
Yeah, you think more. It doesn't have to be so much as you kind of downplay the mysticism side and make it sound religious fervor.
Yeah,
that would be that's a sacred object again. Yes. He's like that's part of the problem that they're having with these two.
And maybe the mask. I mean, because the mask was really kind of hokey looking. It looked like a bowl.
Yeah, they didn't do a very good job making it. But I mean, if this is a crystal mask of some sort, and maybe you could make it look a little bit more crystal skullish like.
Yeah,
and if you're going to steal from all these movies, Indiana Jones, why not steal some from Indiana Jones and make that whole stealing it in the first place that much more of a task.
Exactly.
And I will say one thing about it I did enjoy is it doesn't have eye holes, so I like the idea that it just covers your face because you're going into a different dimension. You shouldn't be able to see through it.
Yeah, and I like the idea of it not having eye holes, but I think that it should have more of a face.
It should.
Right? And it have two eyes, because then that ties into the whole Cyclopean thing. Somebody with two eyes can use it.
I think this is the world that it probably blew up. And shards of it landed on Earth, and that became the monolith monsters.
There we go, yes.
There we go.
I would love to see just a scene, like, maybe when he's getting this, and some water's flowing, and suddenly these crystals start jutting out that he's got to escape, and he could actually have a smaller band of people. He's a ranger that's alone, so maybe have some deputies along with him that are cannon fodder that start get killed by these thrusting out crystals that are rapidly forming within the chamber that he's trying to get this.
To be honest,
just tie it into something classic.
If you're gonna make it this weird classic movie that's stealing from other movies, I'm like, at least make it interesting.
Yeah.
And to be honest, it helps kind of explain the landscape. You can only really live in a dry, arid portion if you want to avoid being killed by crystals.
Yeah. Yeah, like make it, if it's the comms and stuff, you also have to be very careful around it. And I mean, these particular crystals probably wouldn't be worthwhile because you want to keep that away from any kind of civilization, those particular crystals.
Yeah. Yeah, because I mean,
and that would be why
those are the ones to avoid.
And that's why not a lot of people live in that land.
Because it's scary because, you think about it, you sweat so much in this land and then you touch one of those crystals.
Yeah, maybe not water so much, but something salty or whatever. Yeah. Salt water.
Yeah.
I don't know. It'd be interesting.
Definitely land some of that icky water.
Yeah.
Like these high-risk crystals, and maybe some are explosive, or I don't know. I mean, I was thinking about it. I'm like, if these power your vehicles, they're probably irradiated. You guys should all look like you're emaciated and dying.
Yeah.
Yep. Life expectancy of about 5 years.
Yeah,
well, that could be why he has it. Like, maybe part of the glove is there something that keeps it from irradiating him?
Well, I'm thinking this is civilization.
Oh,
obviously accustomed to it.
Yeah, it could be something natural occurring that doesn't harm them, but is useful to them. It's like a battery, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, if it's properly contained, it's safe, right? And then that's essentially what we want to do here too. And I mean, there's so much to fix sucks in this.
I know.
We're at the commerce part. we're at the political structure of the world.
It makes more sense to have the crystals do different things, because I mean having them be currency and do other things, like it means like, do I spend this on something or do I use it for my car?
I don't think it's currency. Yeah, I think it's a resource, right?
No, I think there's a lot of trade involved in it as well, but I think depending on the type of crystals, it depends on the value.
Yeah.
You know? And its trade value, and its purpose. And that's fine. I mean, we've got all sorts of different type of crystals here, but most of them don't do anything.
And they're supposed, you have ones for health and vitality.
Right. And maybe this is actually a world where these actually do shit.
Yeah.
Yes. They're very useful. They do their thing.
So I don't know where you start, but I actually, we were talking about the Cyclopeans and the mask and stuff like that. So there's some thoughts.
Well, I think you would have to start right at the big city with Dojin getting deployed.
Yeah, and with an explanation as to what the crystals are, what they do, and maybe what Jared Sin's doing.
Yeah, and maybe he's looking at footage of Jared doing something. I don't know. Because, I mean, I would think that this is a somewhat advanced society. I mean,
semi-post-apocalyptic is what
I had. But then they have laser cannons and shit, so.
So, there's some contradictions in...
I mean, maybe I'd just switch that to bullets or something that makes it feel a little more grounded.
And then it ties in, and then the magic part works better, right? Because you don't have quite as much science fiction and fantasy.
Yeah.
Right? So if you go to percussive weapons or projectile weapons like that, then it makes sense that they're just a more advanced society.
Yeah.
Right? So it does make more sense to do that.
I think so. Just downplay the mysticism part.
I wouldn't downplay
the science part, because I mean, if you explain that these crystals, this crystal can power a vehicle, and weapons and that sort of thing, and this one is purely for commerce, and this one is the rare one that he's found a crystal we didn't know about that can do things to people's minds.
That's fair. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah,
actually, I like that. I think downplay, but changing.
Wait a minute, we never actually see Jared kill anybody. He takes their souls.
Yeah,
but are their bodies still functioning?
No, because you do see Diana's dad is dead. Okay. After being touched by the crystal.
Okay,
the red crystal.
That's right.
Jared Sin's not the only one who uses it. His son has one as well.
Yes.
Yeah, your little meat sack's rotten after you're taken.
And Dojin gets his from that. A sky sled that he takes down at the very beginning of the movie, right? He gets it off the corpse of the guy who's on that,
right? Yeah. So that's kind of powering their weapons. And
well, I think he's assigned them to his scouts and stuff like that, so they can collect more souls for him.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, he does hand a lot of them out to other nomads and things.
Yeah, so that they can collect souls. Yeah. So, and I like that idea. It's like this is your mission.
Yeah, right? The guys with the fishbowl heads are kind of look cool.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some really interesting.
I think they were meant to look stormtrooper-y, I think. Yeah.
See, I thought they were meant to look like kind of like the Star Wars sort of nomads. Oh, yeah. I mean, they're a mixture of the two. They had the little shiny front, and then they had the ropes, so they were sand people / stormtroopers.
Yeah. Yeah. They kind of remind me of sand people with Crimson Guard helmets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it worked within the context of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think the masks were great because it allowed him to use the same extras over and over and over again, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
You can fill up anything. Like, I mean, honestly, if we're doing this now, you can CGI a ton of people all just with those masks on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could certainly use some trickery to make it look more massive.
Or you can have them, just take pictures of them in different groups and then just meld that.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're going to go to the end scene, because there's that whole thing where Dojin just sort of walks in and makes all these elaborate claims.
Yeah, right? Well, not based on a whole heck of a lot.
Not based on a whole heck of a lot. And the thing about it, too, is I mean, this is where you're expecting sort of this really great climactic fight scene, and you don't get it.
No.
Right? I mean, for sci-fi action, there's not a lot of action in this.
This guy, when he's walking up to this thing, and there seems to be this weird ritual, and Jared Sin's gathering his army, and he just trots in alone, walks in, everybody's like, who's this dude? Just walks
out. They don't do anything.
And it kind of reminds me of that final scene in Conan the Barbarian, where he's walks up to the temple and all these cultists are just so entrenched in the ceremony that They don't notice this dude walking right up to kill their
It worked in that movie, but it didn't work in this one.
Well, in this one, I sort of expected it to be, he would be hassled, and then his buddy be like, no, 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 you don't touch that guy. Well,
that's where I was going.
That's what I thought he was doing.
They establish that there's a relationship between the Cyclopians now and Dojin.
Yeah.
They've created a friendship.
Yeah, Herok was defeated in the ceremonial combat, but gained a lot of respect for Dojin, even though he was on his way to join Jared Sin's army.
Yeah, and I think you have a really great opportunity there to create a true alliance where Herok says, okay, well, I'll go to this meeting with all my army, right? And if we need to, we will... We'll be your backup when you go.
Yeah.
And then you could have this great climactic battle scene between.
Yeah, instead of this speechifying that actually happens.
Yes.
Yeah. And you could have it like it's really. You have this whole other level of the story where Herok is fighting, like, I mean, there are other clans, but these are like Clopians as well. Like, he's fighting his brethren. It's very.
You could do that. I think that might be pushing that.
I don't think
that a little bit far, just because you have other. Clans where you would have a natural animosity.
Yeah, I think, and I think if Herok, if there's already tension between them and the nomads, which I think exists.
I think there is.
And then you have this cultish type thing that's already going on with the Cyclopians, they're going to follow their leader.
Yes.
And if Herok says, hey, I don't like what this guy's swilling. We're not going to drink this fucker's Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, I think majority of the Cyclopians are going to switch sides.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously there was the one loyal guy because he had that cool throwing star thing.
Yeah.
That hurt Tim Thomerson, and he was Cyclopean, but
yeah. But you could change that so the Cyclopeans secretly join without Jared Sin knowing. They have more information. They've made a decision that they're not going to support him.
Yeah.
And if it comes down to it, they will fight him.
Yeah.
Right. So I think you have a great chance to have that dialogue after their ritual combat.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think that would set things up really nicely for a really fun action-packed final scene.
Mm-hmm. An actual battle.
Yeah.
Well, and I think part of it would be, okay, this guy has got mask and it's part of their legend and foretold.
Yeah.
So it makes them question Jared Sin, who's kind of got the other half of...
Because the Chosen One, I'm making air quotes, guys.
Yeah.
The Chosen One has arrived as far as they're concerned.
Yeah.
Right? And that just gives him some credence as well.
So
right?
This political alliance that is happening is now already in jeopardy because of their religious beliefs.
Yeah. Which, I mean, if they're continuing to scarify themselves, as we've decided, their religion is far more important than anything else.
Yeah.
Right.
And it sort of, that sort of was, I thought, some
although
of
that's rewarding religious fanaticism, but.
It is. It's not, we're not telling a message.
I don't want
to
send that message.
But part of when he's trying to like grasp at straws, he's like, see, there's a burning tree. That's like, you can see him trying to really get into that foretelling. He's like, oh no, why is he? I'm chosen.
And you know, you can make Dojin of like, well, okay, these guys are kind of blindly allying themselves with me because of some silly religion, but I'm going to use that. If they're going to pull from Mad Max, and Mad Max was morally questionable.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
But he started in a lawman thing, and let's face it, this guy's got a job and he's trying to finish it.
Yes.
And we should make him single-minded in that pursuit. So at least, like, we don't make Dojin the most likable dude on the planet. It's like, I have a function. This is what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take advantage of these people. And if there is a sequel, we could maybe address that.
Yeah.
You know, hey, dude, you used an entire religious society to get what you want.
To get what you needed.
You took down another evil, but you kind of put yourself in a position where now you are in charge of this religious order.
Yes, where you put yourself in a position where you have to answer to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's.
That would be a good place for a sequel.
That would be a good place. Far more interesting.
Yeah.
And of course, Dojin, let's make him way less useless.
Oh, God, yeah. He should. If he's made it to this point where he's a marshal, then he should be able to do shit. Like, he should be better with a gun. And
he shouldn't get his gun shot out of his hand every single time he gets into a gunfight.
So yeah.
Every time.
I know.
Wait, let's see, Diana.
Or at least
him.
If it happens that often, you should have two.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because Diana saves him.
I actually thought that
Rose
one time.
Him.
I thought his arm had fallen off.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was just so bad, right?
Yeah.
Right. And I wouldn't mind having Diana save him at least once, sort of to establish, because they have, it's weird, their relationship kind of comes out of nowhere.
We should ditch the relationship part. Like, she's just kind of
very tropey in the
80s,
right?
I think she's just pissed he killed her father. That should be it. She'd be like, this guy can help me get revenge.
Driven. Like, there's not even romantic portions within
the
movie.
There's no spark between these two actors.
Yeah, so it doesn't make a lot of sense that a romance would even spark, because we don't see those embers actually happen.
Well, partly because
she just refuses to leave.
Yeah,
right?
And she's not on screen long enough for them to develop any type of relationship.
I mean, there's plenty of fucking time in this movie to do that if you want.
They could have, but yeah, no.
Yeah, but the way we're working on it, there's going to be less time to do that.
But the idea of vengeance makes just more sense.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the way it was set up, and then they just sort of shoehorned the attraction in there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, really, really awkwardly.
Very, very awkwardly.
Yeah. And if she proves useful, he can say, hey, we could always use more marshals. I'm down a few deputies after that Crystal Cave disaster.
And
part of it could be like she's become handy with the weapon because she's had to be, because she's deep in the no man lands.
Yeah.
She can't.
Yeah, they're
be.
Mining in territory they're not supposed to be on.
Well, they had an agreement because as far as they knew, the treaty was still on, and they explained that again. Yeah. Another thing that they did well.
They knew they were pushing the
outlands.
Yes.
They're very far from anybody.
Yes, they knew there were risks, but they didn't know how risky it was because they didn't know that the treaty was over.
Yeah.
They didn't know that Gjertsen was not allowing the mining anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, when you're still out in the middle of nowhere, I would say, her dad would be like, no, we got to make sure that we can take care of ourselves.
Yeah. And if you're pulling from high noon, like, you should show that Gjertsen controls this territory and instead of just telling us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
These guys shouldn't have shown up out of nowhere. They should have been there.
Yeah. Well, I want Gjertsen not to be just sitting in his cave, twiddling his fingers, going maniacally like an evil warlord from the 50s.
Yeah.
Right? Yes. I'm making hand gestures again.
They're very good, you guys. You should be here.
But yeah, I don't want him to be that guy. He should be out there and actively part of the pursuit of Dojin is, you know, maybe not the beginning, but as he gets more and more frustrated with his continued escapes, he's like, okay, well, fuck this. I'm doing it myself.
I wanted Ball, like, it seemed he kept running into Ball, and Ball wasn't doing any pursuing at any point in time.
Yeah, I literally ran him over at one point. Yeah. Like, just ran right through, drove right through his camp.
I love that. I actually love that. I'm keeping that.
And that was one of those morally questionable moments. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And
there's some animosity.
It was the first time he did anything proactive.
Yeah. Yes. And it was just like, well, I'm catching these guys surprised. I'm going to make the most of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would have made even more of it because, I mean, basically all I did was get them to chase him.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. He should have been aiming.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay, low tech, somewhat low tech. And, you know, this was a temporary stopover, just a campsite for them before heading back to the base. But the base shouldn't be in this big cave. Like, if you're creating this army, maybe you should have, honestly, maybe it should have been, he should have been based out of the Lost Temple.
That's what I thought.
Well, that's what the way they set it up, is that's where they were going to get to set. And maybe it's set there, so the other clue is that this is the Lost City, but the temple is somewhere else, right? Like,
the one that containing the mask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or he finds the mask, and the mask tells him where the connective tissue is, that this large crystal that collects the souls is in a different place at a secret temple.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And make it more temple-like, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, right? Absolutely. Like,
instead of just a cave with a crystal outside of it.
Yeah.
Right? Again, probably budget, but like the idea of Dojin just being more proactive, and you're right, a little morally questionable. He'll use whatever means necessary to accomplish his goal. Right?
Yeah, it's probably a small task force versus a large army, so they're going to have to be fairly underhanded to get this job done as we're whittling away at his deputies.
Yeah. And you know what? Maybe they should make it very clear that, he's a seeker, but they never really explain that what a seeker is.
Yeah.
I mean, the name is kind of self-explanatory, but it doesn't explain well that they're solo warriors. They're highly trained and stuff like that. But
I think the official, he was Ranger Finder class, but they called him nickname Seeker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, they don't explain exactly what that means.
Yeah.
And they don't explain exactly anything, to be honest with you. Yeah. But if he's going to have deputies, then we need to have them sort of established. Here's your team.
It's as it slowly falls apart, yeah, that's when he picks up Diana, and Hurrah kind of is unofficially part of that late mm-hmm. in the game as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, I mean, because there's that scene, the scene at the very beginning of the movie where he drives and drives and drives and drives and drives.
It has
and drives
that
and drives
saga drives structure mm-hmm. that Krull and even yeah. the Hobbit have where you're picking up people along the way.
Yeah, and they never take advantage of that.
No, right. I mean, because the feel is there. Yeah. They just don't use it.
Yeah. But yeah, you could have him lose his entire team during that first 10 minutes, during that first yeah. attack by the Nomads. Right, yeah. Like that's where he's the only survivor from it.
Yeah, and that would get him a lot more pissed off. So yeah. it'd certainly be the reason why he would just run over an encampment of them.
Oh. Exactly, and it yeah. gives him a reason to be collecting more people.
And yeah. I also like that also can bring in really that the Tim Thomerson character where he previously was one of those guys.
Yeah.
Just decided he's like, no, screw this. I'm going to go live out in the middle of nowhere because I just want to.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm sick of that life. I didn't want to do it, but he just gets pulled back in.
Yeah, I think maybe there should be like a history and that we could just, that can happen in at the beginning of the movie when his bosses are sending Dojin out is he's already got a history with Baal and that's where Baal's, a lot of those scars have come from.
Yeah, and you can set it up so there's more animosity between the two of them.
Yeah. Right.
And I will say this, and we talked about how Baal's the most interesting character. The facial expressions and the way that character held his mouth all the way through the movie was just such great face acting because he has very little dialogue.
I kept thinking of like, he's yeah. just as confused as the rest of us.
Yes.
Well, isn't a lot of his dialogue just him thinking?
It's voice. It's voice box.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, he couldn't actually talk, so it was coming through this voice box in his neck.
Okay, see, again, something that I just yeah. I oh, totally yeah, missed.
It's actually in the makeup. You can see it.
Yeah, you can see it. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It's a little.
But
I think
it would have helped if we saw at least some movement in his face, in his mouth, making it look like he's kind of talking.
Yeah,
rather than just like a robot voice coming out of his neck.
He does definitely need some work. And why is he green? So, and that's where the explanation of the crystals could come in. Is that he came in contact with a crystal that was toxic and has changed him. It gives you a reason for why he looks the way he does mm-hmm. in comparison to everybody else in this world, mm-hmm. which could make it a lot more interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I ditched the green goo, unless the green goo is what fucked him up in the first place.
Yeah, or is a byproduct of whatever fucked him up.
Yeah.
Right? Is he's now generating this toxic...
Oh, it's a release.
Yeah.
It's a release from his own system.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah, it's because, yeah, he's been contaminated and...
The green goo, his body's producing it, and it's a way to release the toxins from his body.
Yeah, and it incapacitates other people, right? It's a...
Well, because it contains all the toxins.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that.
It's all the grossness.
It makes more sense.
Yeah, it's a poison. Yeah.
Which can, like, some of the equipment on him, it would make more sense, or, like, some of it is just keeping him alive, taking those toxins out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And collecting them so that but he knows that they're useful, so they collect them in a tank somewhere, like, on his back or in his arm.
Oh, I'd like to see some, like, floating in a tank.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As we're seeing, like, there's a respirator up and down within it.
Yeah. Yeah, they make him look even cooler.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm liking where we're going with this character.
Yeah. Right? He was the coolest looking one.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
We can just add to that.
We were promised so much in that trailer of this character.
Yeah, we can make more of it make sense.
Yeah.
I mean, the green goo was kind of silly, but if we can...
Make it work
a little bit better.
Yeah. Yeah, because if his toxin is coming out of his own system, then that can incapacitate somebody in one with the other, then they make sense, right?
Yeah.
Make the arm... makes sense too, like that he uses it to shoot it at people.
Yeah. Oh, maybe we can see these nomads raid an encampment of just settlers.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Within this territory, and this is how they're taking over the territory. We can see that because this is supposed to be like a sci-fi western, and we don't mm-hmm. really see a lot of the western aspects of it.
That's where he loses his deputies. Is he comes across these nomads raiding an encampment? They go into. Rescue the encampment,
yeah.
Or this little.
I would
love
to see him use that green goo to infect a water supply, something in a much more imaginative way of giving some use to this.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah,
I like that very much. And yeah, maybe they come across this encampment that he's poisoned. As they come in there, that's when they get.
And you find all these dead bodies.
Find all these dead bodies. Mm-hmm. Exactly. But these souls are collected.
Yeah,
and then they get ambushed by Baal's troops while they're there, mm-hmm. taking out his entire team except yeah. for him.
Yeah.
And I mean, you could even do the Road Warrior thing where he's injured, mm-hmm. right? Because just to give it some more gravitas. Because when they get bit by those sandworm things,
yeah. Yeah, neither of them are really actually there. Injured.
No,
no, they're running perfectly fine. Everything's fine. Like his arm gets bit, but he fights, and there's nothing on it.
Yeah.
The next scene. Yeah.
I mean, because at one point we do actually see Dojin's been affected by that green goo as well. And we could actually have that there where they haven't actually collected his soul. They just missed him.
Yeah.
And that he's overcomes it.
Yeah, that he's, somehow he managed to hide himself before the goo actually took full effect. And so they missed him. That'd be perfect.
Yeah.
It gives him more motivation and also adds to his how driven he is to stop this, because now they've taken his team. It's affected him very personally now. It's not just a job.
Yeah, and we're starting to see the psychological effects are temporary of this.
The physiological effects are...
Unless that crystal comes in contact with them, then they'll come back.
Yeah. Oh, and it gives him a partial immunity. So the next time he comes across Bal, you can have a fun moment.
He has a little bit of resistance.
Yeah, so he gets hit again, and then he kind of shrugs it off. He's like...
That trick only works once.
Yeah. A great line, too.
Where's your crystals now, bitch?
Yeah, because that could come in a really great final confrontation between him and Bal.
Yeah.
Right.
Or maybe he just discovers, like, maybe that could be something with Zax, is they've developed some sort of formula. You've already come in contact with this, so you've got somewhat of resistance. We can give you this
complete immunity
to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gives Zax something more than an expository bullshit.
Really bad expository bullshit.
Yeah, those crystals are reflecting off each other. I'm like, what kind of bullshit pseudoscience is this?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and he should know what the red crystals do right off the bat.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And if you're an expert, you should know.
Yeah. And they can, because we'll have a brief explanation of the crystals, but the red crystals are extremely rare. And Zax is like, I've never seen one of these before, but I know what they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Or when he sees it, he's just like, holy shit, where the fuck did you get that?
Yeah, because, Dojin's got a fairly big one. This guy's got a tiny little shard, and it might steal the soul of, like, a sand rat or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the larger the crystal, the more souls it can
steal. The larger the soul.
I think the usage of these smaller crystals is finite.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But make it a more elaborate, make it have like a handle to protect the user, and make it more ceremonial, because that's what it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right?
Yeah. And I like the idea. And they might even have
They're in staffs and in interesting gauntlets maybe something that has more of a handle to
at
it.
That
like,
end,
there'd be all sorts of cool
at that end part where the one guy is like holding the crystal up against that big crystal. You could have this whole where the ceremonial, they're all there and they're all holding it onto the big crystal.
Yeah. Give Jared Sin like this huge one that's almost like a ceremonial sword. So just to make it that much more symbolic, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not just this little thing that he holds in his hand. It's like this, like 3 feet long.
Yeah. He's not just stealing their souls. It's a death blow.
Yeah.
Yeah. As he's like impaling him.
Because he's just cruel.
As part of the process, he pushes it through them and.
Yeah.
Ooh,
our movie's way.
Because he's like, I'm not just going to kill you. I'm going to take your fucking soul.
Yeah.
That's evil.
Yeah. And you could even have him in that scene where they're stealing the souls from that settlement. Right? He's gone and it's not just a one off. They're doing like 50 people or 100 people. So he's there to make it again ceremonial. Like he's trying to create a religion. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. So
we have so many cults.
Yes, we do.
We do.
Right.
We'll say that at least the Cyclopean one's an established one. That's just what their society does.
Yes.
Yeah.
This guy's more David Koresh.
Yes. Exactly. So we can make him
don't drink the green goo.
Yeah.
That's right.
Exactly. But we can make him a lot more interesting.
Yeah. Right?
And a lot more evil.
Yeah, but I mean I like the idea of like Bal and his men doing most of the handiwork, and he's the coward that comes in and impales people with the swords at the last minute.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't think he should be useless as a fighter, because we got to have that climactic scene, but, he's got underlings for most of the heavy duty, so he just walks up and stabs people.
Yeah, and he only shows up and shows
what a dickhead he is.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Shows what a dickhead he is, and he only shows up for these moments where it benefits him somehow by being there to show them that he is this great leader. Right? Mm-hmm. And they don't realize that, well, no, you're my fucking cannon fodder, and I can't really give a shit what happens to you as long as you still serve a purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the ultimate goal that he's trying to do with these crystals? Like, how does he know? I think it's not the souls per se, it's them powering up this large crystal. So what does this crystal actually power?
I think that the temple, that's a really good point, is the temple is not really a temple, it's housing a weapon. An ancient weapon that is powered by these crystals,
mm-hmm.
but that crystal had been depleted, and the only way to refill it is the souls.
Mm-hmm.
So it's some sort of weapon that will allow him to...
I don't like calling them souls. Let's call it bioenergy.
Yeah.
Right. If we, it's like Thor. You're explaining the magic as if it sounds like science.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it'll be some sort of energy weapon that will allow him to destroy whole cities from a distance if that's what he wants to do. And
there
that,
you go.
That because it's a big crystal. It can release a lot of energy as needed, right?
Yeah, maybe it's something that he can release that energy and refract it off maybe these natural crystalline satellites within this system.
Oh, you could have a map that shows where they all are. And that's one of the reasons after Dojin is he's found the map even.
Yeah.
Right. So there's an added motivation for them to want to get him. It's like, well, he's got the fucking map.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. It's very derivative, but that's okay.
That's all right. Everything, this whole movie is already. Yeah, at least they were making it interestingly derivative.
Yes. Yeah. I've been playing Uncharted, the first Uncharted, so there's the maps and stuff in there.
Oh, okay. And there is kind of like this Indiana Jones quest portion of this movie that we can totally take and use in interesting ways.
Yeah.
I mean, this movie is a quest movie, and a large portion of it should be.
And he could describe, like, when you're talking about that map, like, he could describe the map as like, those are the other temples. I mean, I call them temples, or the other signal boosters that you can get from eight, like, you can use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even better. Sorry, I just had an idea.
Yeah, you're mixing these crystalline, I mean, for them, it's mysticism, but it's a science that's been in place there for long before there were a society.
Exactly.
It's an ancient society that's already put this there, an ancient technology that they're now accessing.
Yeah, well, exactly. And we're talking about finding the lost city of Set.
Mm-hmm.
You know how this could work is when they send him off to do his job, they hand him this map and says, "This is the only map we have of the nomad lands. All the landmarks are the crystals. They just don't know that they're significant. Mm-hmm. They're just landmarks."
Mm-hmm.
Right, so that's how they finally has the map. Is one of them somewhere along the line sees that he has this map. Maybe during that first interaction with Ball and them, they see that he has a map, and then they can't find him when they're trying to collect all the bioenergies.
Mm-hmm.
They can't find him, but they know he has a map that shows where all the crystals are.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe it's another, like, it's a map crystal, and it, you know, you touch it and it projects the map and shows you where all of the other temples are.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that kind of holographic thing better.
It's a different society, so you don't want everything to look the same as it would here, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's bad enough those vehicles look the way they do, and, you know, that gives them an opportunity to be very imaginative and creative with their Wastelander-type vehicles.
And to be fair, like, a crystalline map makes sense for a sequence of crystals.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. And yeah, like they say, we don't even know where this map came from, but it's the only map we have of the Nomad Lands.
Mm-hmm.
It ties in really nicely. It gives us a reason for it to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And it also gives it a purpose beyond just being a map, right?
Maybe that's exactly what you can't actually view the map without the mask. Maybe that's what the mask is for.
Or no, the mask shows you more of the map than just these landmarks.
It shows more of what
the mask takes you to where you want to go on the map.
It shows you the secret locations on the map, the stuff that's not on the map, on the regular map. So it shows you the secret, the location of the secret temple. Right? It's there is
the master crystal.
Where the master crystal is. Yeah. So it basically allows them to see into a different light spectrum.
Well, you know, that'd be cool if say it just gives him night vision, so he comes in during that night ceremony, can he just stealthily start killing off the guards?
Yeah, I don't know.
I have night vision goggles.
See, I like a dimensional idea of it, is where the temple itself, it's not so much a place you can just go to. You have to have the stuff to get there.
Mm-hmm. But how does Jared get there without it?
Yeah, that's the caveat, right? Mm-hmm. Right.
But is he actually at the temple? I forgot.
Well, we've decided that he is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he's charging the battery there, right?
Yeah.
So maybe. Because,
I mean, if it's the battery, maybe it's in a different spot than the actual final crystal.
Well, we can explain that is that he finds it unintentionally. And that's what motivates him.
Yeah.
Motivates him to decide his quest to take
Jared's
over.
Is discovered.
He's an
opportunist. He's an opportunist. He's found a certain function for this thing, but he doesn't have all the instruction pieces for it. The mask is a control center. Like I said, we've decided this is a technology that kind of looks like magic, and say the mask is what can fire off this energy up into the satellites, but Jared doesn't know that. He's not sure exactly how to channel this energy once he's got it.
Oh, there you go. I like
so
that.
He knows it exists, but he hasn't found it yet. So there's this constant competition to get it.
Yeah, I like that. So he ends up with so he has the map that Jared wants, and then he ends up with the mask that allows him to use the map fully and to control the device. Yeah. I see where you're going with that. I like it.
So at one point you can have a lot of cat and mouse, and you can actually have, like, say Jared loses one piece only to gain the other one, or vice versa. You know, a little bit of catch and release, because I think that should be a risk, because it makes you feel like Dojin's losing, right? So he shouldn't have all the pieces. He's found the map. It's got him to the mask, but during the conflict he's lost the map.
Yes,
to the enemy, but he still has the mask. Yeah. So that still keeps that conflict there, right? Because Jared still hasn't got all the pieces yet. But it gives Jared an advantage now, because he knows where all these other temples that he can channel all this energy into, all these master crystals.
I like it.
Yeah. But he still can't actually access it without that mask.
Yeah. Because then he's not just an irritant, he's a necessity.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I like where we're
going. So they have to kind of be careful, because they don't want... Yeah, they have to get Dojin, but they can't be super hostile, because they don't want to break this thing. Is that everything that they have the in this world is pretty fragile, apparently.
Yeah, that mask breaks real easy.
It does. The crystal blows up easily. I mean, the one they find in the mine shatters pretty easily.
Yes. Yeah. Oh. See, everything just made about how the mask can tell them how to destroy the battery. The red sword can destroy it. It can feed it, but it can also destroy it, right? He gets the red sword from Jared, and he uses that red sword to smash the crystal, freeing all the energy, right? So it could be kind of fun to have that. But I love the idea of having that mask look really, really cool and elaborate. Mm-hmm. But I like that, not having the eye holes, because they're not necessary for...
No.
Yeah, I agree. You know, now that we've discovered that, it should have more of a Pan's Labyrinth kind of...
Yeah.
Look to it.
Yeah.
Just look really interesting and weird.
Yeah. And you could have some fun visuals too, with sort of this interesting double vision where you can see both worlds and have that disorientation too.
Well, so,
I
mean,
what am I seeing?
It's like looking through one of those kaleidoscope things.
Yeah. Almost, yeah. But then he slowly learns how to switch back and forth between the two of them. It'd be really kind of cool too.
Yeah. Right?
Ultimately, yeah. And I mean, I think there should be sort of, it is those two realities. But there, if it is the whole thing with, like, bioenergy, I think maybe you should be able to see something with that mask, like stuff that hasn't been captured.
Oh, I think we've established that it does.
Yeah.
You know, there are advantages to having the mask that beyond just the control center. Like, there should be, like, a HUD to it.
Yeah.
And that gives him advantage. So if he's alone and it's like, all right, there's an enemy over there.
Yeah, I think he can... see like their shape, even if he can't see the detail, he can see like the outline of their energy.
Yeah,
right?
Something he wouldn't been able to see otherwise.
Yeah, and also knowing where the crystals are, because they might be these guys with the crystals, so we should be able to see that.
Yeah, no, it's helping him find the locations, and the fact that all of the soldiers have the crystals, that's what the mask
that's
is homing in on. That's what it's
seeing,
because it's linked to that technology. Yeah. Okay, well... We got this one ran away from us, but we had so much to fix. We had to write an entire movie.
Yes.
Let's get into some casting here. And if we have a few more last minute ideas, we can throw them in as well. Anybody want to start us off?
I'll go ahead and start us off.
All right. Because Sam was away last week. He can be first.
Yes. And it's a fairly short cast.
Yeah. Because, there's really only like five or six principal cast in this movie.
I cast six sort of. The six appeared most in the movie.
Yeah.
So for my Dojin, I cast Brenton Thwaites. He was in Oculus and he's currently playing Robin in Titans.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
So I thought he's obviously at least somewhat capable of doing action stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? He's got a good look, so I figured, he'd be good. For my Rhodes, I went Lou Diamond Phillips.
Okay.
Cool.
Because he's capable as a physical actor, and he's just...
And Rhodes is that charismatic, but he is an older character, but he's a charismatic kind of Han Solo-esque guy as well. So it should be somebody who's likable, but...
Who can play the renegade fairly well.
Yeah, exactly.
And Lou Diamond's really good at that, if given the opportunity.
That was my thoughts going into that character.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we did with mine as well.
Yeah.
For my Jared Sin, Andy Serkis.
Okay.
I love him in live action, and I think he'd play the maniacal cult leader really, really well.
Yeah, and I think Jared needs a costume and maybe a makeup change too, because he's just in this padded pleather
really
outfit.
Heavy eyeshadow.
That weird bubble helmet at the end drove me insane.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that drove me insane.
Well, you know why they did that? Both of them put on helmets is they didn't want to have to deal with the wind machine hair while they're whipping away on the chase on the sky sleds.
Oh, those special features told you a lot more about the movie than the movie did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's why they did that.
I could believe it, but every time I looked at it, I'm like going, okay, I see how this is like Star Wars meets whatever, because it looked like it was a helmet with Leia hair.
And then it started to look like Spaceballs at that point.
Really did. So right.
For my Diana, I went with Keisha Castle Hughes from Whale Rider. Mm-hmm. She was also had an extended story arc in Game of Thrones.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. Excellent, excellent actress.
She's one of the Sand Snakes, right?
Yes, she is. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that she'd be great to, especially to amp up the action part of this particular character.
Yes.
For my Hurok, I went with Mickey Rourke. I thought he would be great in that type of role. He's older, but I think that he could still do the physical roles really, really well.
Yeah, I still wanted somebody like physically as imposing as Richard Mall, so we'll get there.
Yeah, and I did, but I changed it up a little bit because I thought that even though he's not as tall, I mean, Mickey Rourke, given that he's in his 60s now, he's still in really great,
tremendous shape.
Yeah. Tremendous shape.
And his I hate to say
his face is already melting, so that doesn't require makeup.
Thank you.
Yes, and that was also,
that's where I was
I know
going.
Where you were going.
Yeah, that was actually one of my deciding factors. It's
going to be cost effective.
Yes. He really is.
Yeah. For my Belle, I actually went with an actress by the name of Devon Dalton. She is most well known for voice acting and motion capture.
Oh, cool.
She's worked with our friend Andy Serkis a few times on the most recent Planet of the Apes movies.
Cool.
Yeah, she plays Cornelia.
Okay.
Nice. Yeah. Well, and see that this ball to get a lot across, we're going to have somebody who knows movement. So mocap is great.
That's why I went that way.
That's a great idea.
Let's look for some motion capture. And she's Canadian, so I'm like, yeah, I'll go for the Canadian connection there. And then for my director, because I was kind of leaning towards more of like a sort of making this movie a little more humorous, take advantage of how bad it was and make it funnier. Mm-hmm. But in our remake, this may not work so well. I went with Paul Verhoeven.
Okay.
To buy it, because he would have bought into the camp.
Yeah, and he would have leaned into the violence and campiness.
Yes.
It.
And he'd still work.
Oh, yeah, it'd totally work.
Yeah, he'd still, I think so. So, yeah, that's who
I like yours better than mine, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Trish, you're
struggling with director.
Okay.
So, this was hard. So, yeah, I started with Jared Sin, Michael Sheen. I do go him quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Dojin, Michael Heisman. He was in the recent Haunting of Hill House.
Okay.
But he was also Game of Thrones, so, like, put him in desert, he's fine.
Yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about, yeah.
And then Diana, I went with Kate Siegel, who was my favorite character actually in Haunting of Hill House. I'm like, let's just lean into this.
Okay.
Hurok, Rory McCann, the Hound from Game of Thrones.
Okay.
Rhodes, I went a weird way. I'm like, Jason Statham, just put him in something camp.
Actually, you know what's funny is he was on my list originally.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Awesome. And then Ball, I just went with Karen. I was lazy. I went with Karen Gillan because I'm like, she's basically done this character already.
Yeah, I guess she kind of is.
But she can talk.
Or not Gamora. Nebula.
Nebula. Yeah.
Nebula.
Okay. Right down to the fake arm.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. Did you have a director?
I didn't. I was struggling with that because I was waffling between comedy. Actually, I was like, just make this as a comedy because I got so frustrated at a certain point. Mm-hmm.
And that's why I came up with who I came up with.
Yeah.
I didn't want to just steal from like Mad Max entirely, but I'm like, oh man, somebody known for doing car movies and to be able to go that much over the top with it, Justin Lin. Yeah, so that's, I went with Justin Lin, and it's like, okay, if he could take Fast and the Furious and throw the Road Warrior aspects to it, I'd like to see what he could do with it.
Yeah, see, then the driving wouldn't be boring.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's something if you're going to call it Metal Storm, the driving shouldn't be boring, and it is in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
For my lead, I went with Boyd Holbrook. He was the villain in Logan, and he was the lead in the Predator, the most recent Predator. I think he's talented, and he's got that not so good good guy kind of look to it.
Yeah.
Like, he kind of does look like a bad guy, but can be a good guy. And even though the Predator sucked, I feel like he's got a good movie in him.
It would be so weird and ironic if Metal Storm is going to be his best performance.
I know. But, you know, he felt kind of, I think he had that right look that I was looking for.
Yeah.
Jessica Lucas, I wanted as Diana. She was in Cloverfield and Evil Dead, and she's in Gotham as well. This movie needs a little bit of variety as well, so I think she'll be a nice leading lady for this movie.
Perfect.
For my Jared Sin, I went with Sean Harris, who was the villain in Mission Impossible 5 and 6, the most recent ones.
Oh, okay, I haven't seen the most recent.
He's got a really interesting vocal range that I'm like, oh man, every time he opens his mouth, he's just scary.
Well, if you
I think he was in Aliens Covenant as well.
Well, if you have somebody trying to create like a cult sort of atmosphere, you need somebody who's a great orator.
Yeah, I think he's kind of got that thing. For Rhodes, we just said he should be charismatic and kind of playful and funny and roguish, but a little bit older. I went with Billy Zane.
Oh,
also a good choice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm in love with that choice.
Yeah, I was too. The scientist guy who kind of shows the crystal stuff, maybe there's still a role there, but I put Jeffrey Combs in that role.
As a throwback to Charles Band, I like it.
Yeah, as a throwback to Charles Band. For Hurok, I wanted big, large guy. This guy was in Prometheus, AVP, Game of Thrones, Ian White.
Okay.
Very large dude. And for Ball, I went with Anthony Corrigan. He plays Zaz on Gotham.
Ooh.
He keeps the bald head. I think he's got a cool look, and he's that thin but evil looking, kind of weird looking dude. So with some makeup, it's just going to accentuate all of that.
Nice.
Sweet.
Yeah, so nice. I think we got an awesome casting, and I think we got... Well, God, we wrote a goddamn movie.
We essentially rewrote the entire damn thing.
You had to.
And here's the question.
And we could actually call it The Destruction of Jared Sin instead of The Getaway of Jared Sin.
Yeah.
But I don't... Did we dig enough, I know there's a battle at the end, but did we, dig enough into the climax, where he releases the souls?
I think so, yeah. I think we kind of covered it in various forms throughout the episode. Yeah. Yeah, because we discussed about the final conflict actually happening inside the crystal.
Yeah, but then you
changed it to bioenergy.
But then you changed to bioenergy, and then you changed it to the sword. So I wasn't sure where we landed.
We didn't change it to the sword. It was just a thought.
Yeah, I like the sword idea.
I like the sword idea, but it should be inside.
Yeah, and
I have it. I have the climactic scene. Is he gets the sword away from Jared Sin, pins him to the crystal with the sword, breaking the crystal. It pulls and then pulls him into the crystal as it explodes.
And we're seeing the shards. Oh yeah, that would be cool. Oh, I would love to see Jared Sin actually break apart in a crystalline way.
Yeah. Mm. Right. So because he creates that weak point in the crystal that sucks him in, and then as it explodes. Yeah.
Oh. And in the sequel, we'll tell you what the Sin crystals do.
There we go. There we go.
It's that episode of Black Mirror where they run your house.
Yeah. But yeah, that way we can tie the crystal into his demise, which is what we wanted to do, right? Mm-hmm. Without getting really deeply into the mystical stuff, but still giving that sort of mystical feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm kind of digging it. So, okay, Universal, remake this movie. Maybe not with Charles.
Do they still own it?
I don't know. Scream Factory released it recently. I think Universal still owns it because it did have their tag at the front of it, so... I don't think Charles owns it.
That's the question I always have about copyright. Is do you just still own it, or if nobody wants it, do you just keep it?
Yeah. I don't know. And maybe that's one of those things that we don't know where it landed. I mean, that would have been before Charles Band's company, but his dad was actually the producer of the thing. I think it was his dad.
It was his dad, yeah.
Yeah.
Albert Band.
Yeah. So, so I don't know.
And his brother was the composer as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that just shows how nepotism works in Hollywood.
Yeah. Well, kept the budget down.
Yeah.
I mean, staying alive and Frank Stallone doing all the music, that tells you everything you need to know.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
All right. Any final thoughts?
I think we've imagined better movie than we got.
Yeah, I think so too. It still has that fun B-level cheese, though, that I think we were looking for and didn't quite get. It was... We got C and D level cheese.
Yeah. Well, and I think the problem is it took itself too seriously. And I think Charles Band figured out that how to do this type of stuff and inject that humor into it. Because, I mean, if you watch Puppet Master or Doll
Man, he certainly learned from it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? He's now gotten quite good at doing that on an extremely low budget.
Yeah. Embracing the silliness of it is okay, too. I'm not sure what the tone is going to be. But, yeah, I think, you could have it in there, and that it doesn't have to be super camp.
Yeah.
but it should lead into just having fun.
Yeah, and that's what informed my director. I wanted somebody who knows exactly how to capture both.
And I think that great action, great project for him.
Yeah, and well, that slight bit of camp and humor, right?
Yeah,
like with Jared Sin, like it's just going to land more. I think if it's like more like really mustache twirling, like real leaning into it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, and again, that's also my casting for Jared Sin really was informed by where I wanted to go. I mean, if you want somebody who's going to twirl that mustache
within an inch of its life.
Yeah. yeah, so.
Twirly.
Yes, and yeah, like I said, he's an actor that I just love seeing in live action roles. I think he's far more capable than just motion capture, even though he's probably one of the best people at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's really good. When I see him in live action roles, he's doesn't disappoint.
Yeah, yeah. Black Panther.
Yeah.
He's great in Black Panther. Yeah. I hated his guts, but he was great.
Speaking of mustache twirling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. yeah, you can find that character actor, you can pull it off.
Yeah, and you know what? I didn't realize how he was really intimidating looking in that, too. Like,
yeah, he was. He buffed up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we know that he can look intimidating, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, without having to have a bubble costume. Yeah. yeah. What was that? Please, somebody explain it to me.
Oh, don't forget the red leotard, too.
Right. yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is clearly a product of its time. Like, when you talk about 80s cheese, this really is a classic example of that type of movie.
Yeah.
Because there were a lot of them out there. There were so many of them out there. And some of them worked, but most of them didn't. This is a really good example of one that didn't.
I agree. But you know what does work? Is telling all your friends about the show and listening to us on Radio Public. Radio Public gives us a little extra something-something for all your listens. You're enjoying listening to the show, do it on Radio Public, and we get a little, we earn a little extra just for you doing what you're already doing, is listening to the show. So go over to Radio Public and start listening to Invasion the Remake over there. It's available on iOS and Android. We get a few cents for every listen, so, you know, the more listeners, the more that adds up. It'd be nice to earn something for doing this or at least pay for the hosting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. yeah, but you're not obligated to.
No, absolutely. Mm-hmm. We're still available in all the other places you already enjoy us. And if you're married to wherever you're listening to us, that's fine. Stick with it. Just tell your friends about the show and how to find us. Search us out. We're in a bazillion different platforms, so just find us. And make sure you follow us on our social media. We are at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and invasiontheremake@gmail.com. If you want to email us your questions and your suggestions and your comments, we'll be happy to read them and respond to them.
And we're very responsive. We tend on Twitter and Facebook, we respond very, very quickly. We don't mess around. So if you have questions or you just want to talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll eventually reply to you if you're on YouTube as well, but I only log into that once a week or so. So it may take a few days before you see that response, but I'll get there.
But yes, we do like talking to you.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is actually coming out the first week of December, so the next couple episodes we're going to get into some more holiday fare before we get into our seasonal break and start our new season again in January. So we got two more episodes for 2018.
Two regular episodes, yeah.
Yeah, two full episodes, and we might have something dropping, something short and special for you for Christmas and New Year's, but... Yeah.
We haven't decided what that might be yet.
Yeah, though. Watch your feeds. There might be something, a little short something while you're on your way to your family dinner.
Yeah, or something you can play at your family dinner. Introduce your family to us.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Listen to us while you're unwrapping your gifts, because we're the greatest gift of all.
I wish there was like a podcast gift certificate to say, here, I'm going to give you this podcast. Please listen to it.
Ooh, somebody create one of those.
It's called a USB stick.
No, yeah. It's called an email.
Here you go.
It's called an email with a link.
Exactly. Well, yeah.
Text with a link.
Yeah. I mean, if you're talking a physical object,
you need something like a certificate. Saying,
just a little USB stick with all our episodes on there.
You could, but that sounds like effort.
Yeah. It's just like the idea.
Here's a card with the link on it.
Yeah. something physical like beyond a USB stick. It's like because you can sort of see it, right? I don't know. I'm just fantasizing.
Oh, if you can get a USB stick that looks like a UFO. perfect. Fill it with all our content. But that doesn't get a subscription. That's why I want you to give them the link.
Yeah. That's why gifts I want to give the link.
All right. Well, I think that's it for Metal Storm, The Destruction of Jared Zinn.
Where we made an honest title of it.
Yes, we made an honest. It's not The Disappearance of Jared Zinn, The Escape of Jared Zinn.
The Disappointment of Jared Zinn?
This is The Disappointment of Jared Zinn.
It's appropriate in so many ways.
The 3D middle finger of Jared Zinn.
Ooh, it's so lifelike, that finger. It's in my face. It's picking my nose.
Look, that middle finger's coming right at me.
Get it out of my mouth.
Ew.
I know. That's how I felt about this movie.
Yeah, it was an anger moment at the end of the movie.
It was. You were texting me. I'm like, were you as angry as I was?
Yes.
I literally wrote down my last thing. Yeah. You know, Rhodes picks up Dojin and Diana, and then the credits roll, and I go, fuck you, movie. Yes.
I think it's just the audacity of it. That's what bothers me the most. The hubris.
Yes. Yeah. The fact that you were expecting a sequel.
Yes, yeah. You are correct.
Oh, and they could have. I mean, it made money. But.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm done with this piece of crap.
Yes.
I've been Jason.
I am always Sam.
I continue to be Trish.
And we are out of here.
Sin escaped. He tapped into the master crystal. Created some sort of a energy tunnel. He's gone.
And Jared Sin could emerge in another world. Another time.
Wherever he is, he'll be trapped.